From the Katzen Arts Center at American University, sponsored by the School of Communication and WAMU 88.5, I'm Jane Hall, and this is the American Forum. In the 2008 presidential campaign, young people played a major role in electing Barack Obama. They led the innovative online campaign, organizing and mobilizing for Obama, and their enthusiasm early on helped him to win votes, political endorsements, and intense media coverage. 22.4 million young Americans voted in 2008, and these 18 to 29-year-olds went for Obama over John McCain by a wide margin, 66% for Obama, only 32% for McCain. With troop buildups in Afghanistan, serious problems in the economy, and a partisan battle over health care reform, one year later, how do young people view President Obama? Obama has been criticized for his handling of social issues like don't ask, don't tell in the military. He has recently pledged to overturn this, but with no deadline. Can he get this done? And there are questions about whether Obama as president.gov can ever be as transparent and as effective as Obama, the online candidate. Will young voters turn out in the midterm congressional elections? One year into Obama's presidency, is this the change they can believe in? We have a diverse, expert group of panelists and a packed house of young people here to discuss these issues. Welcome to the American Forum, Change Plus One, our young people talking back to Obama. I want to introduce our panelists, and then we'll get right to our discussion and questions from students. To join the conversation, visit twitter.com/American_forum or use the hashtag AMForum. David Gregory is a journalist and moderator of NBC's Meet the Press. He is also a regular contributor on the MSNBC cable network and the Today Show. Before he became the moderator for NBC's influential Meet the Press program, David was NBC's White House correspondent, where he was known for mixing it up with presidents and press secretaries. He has covered three presidential campaigns and decisions about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Jose Antonio Vargas is the Technology and Innovations Editor for the Huffington Post. He recently launched a site on Huffington Post that looks at technology as anthropology. Before joining Huffington Post, Jose was a national political reporter for a number of years at the Washington Post. He created a beat at the Washington Post that broke new ground by focusing on the impact of the internet on politics and the media. David Winston is a Republican strategist and expert on strategic communication. He's president and founder of the Winston Group. He's worked for many years with the Republican leadership in the House and Senate on their political messaging. He was director of planning for Newt Gingrich when the Republicans took over Congress in the 1990s, and he lays claim to being one of the first political bloggers. David Korn is the Washington bureau chief of Mother Jones magazine and a columnist for politicsdaily.com. Prior to that, he was the Washington editor of The Nation magazine for 20 years. He writes on a host of subjects from politics to national security and foreign policy. He has written both novels and nonfiction books, including a bestseller on the war in Iraq and the Bush administration. He regularly appears as a commentator on television and in major newspapers. Erin McPike is a political reporter for Congress Daily at the National Journal. She covers the Senate and House races, as well as the national political landscape. Prior to joining Congress Daily, she covered Mitt Romney's presidential campaign, reporting from the road for both the National Journal and NBC News. I'm Jane Hall. I'm an associate professor in the School of Communication at American University, and I'm the moderator for the American Forum series on WAMU. Before coming to the university, I was a longtime media reporter in New York, including 9 years with the Los Angeles Times. I'm a regular commentator on TV, and I specialize in teaching and writing about politics, media, and young people. Welcome, everyone. To continue the conversation, visit twitter.com/American_forum or use the hashtag AMForum. Okay, now I want to get right away to questions. David Gregory, my colleague Dottie Lynch and her students crunched some data that was provided to us by CBS and the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, and NBC. And in that, they found that young people view Obama very strongly personally, still very favorably, but they have increasing concerns about the Iraq war. 42% think that we should be reducing troop levels, and about the same number think that they do not approve of what he's doing there. Are young people the leading edge of erosion for Obama's support on the war, and what can the administration do about this?
Are you talking about Iraq or Afghanistan?
Afghanistan.
Afghanistan. Well, first let me say it's great to be back at the American Forum. I started coming to American Forums 21 years ago, which shows that I'm getting older and have less in common with you than I, in my mind, do.
You're still hip. You're still hip.
But these are great events, and this is a great opportunity for discussion. Look, I think a couple of things are going on. You know, young people voting for Obama was about leadership, and it was about a unique moment, I think, in a lot of young people's lives where they became engaged in the electoral process and in politics in a way that they hadn't really thought about politics before, and could identify generationally with someone who appeared to be hip and appeared to and was younger, and who also had a kind of a galvanizing message that I think young people had not heard before, which was get involved, get engaged, do something to become a participant in both the political process and in the role of government. And I think that resonated with a lot of young people, and the ability to do that through social networking and the like only enhanced his appeal. What the president's going through now is the other side of that, which is young people are also, I think, pretty anti-institutional right now. There's not a lot of faith in government. There's a lot of faith in Obama. There's not a lot of faith in government. There's not as much faith in the media. There's probably not as much faith in banks or in some of the, you know, the familiar ways to invest your money. I mean, you kind of look at the world and say, you know, what am I supposed to trust here? What am I supposed to do? So I think Obama's feeling all of that. And when it comes to Afghanistan, this is now kind of fully his conflict to own, even though it was inherited. And his decision about escalation runs slap into the idea that I think younger people are coming to grips with the fact that this is a really difficult war. It's gotten worse, not better, and yet we've been there 8+ years. And the more attention there is to it, and the more young people are coming of age, frankly, they're realizing that there's very little progress, and there's more of an emotional connection, I think, now than there was, I think, 8 years ago when the war started, right after 9/11, you know, people who are now a little bit older now, but, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-olds were a lot younger. And now they're reconnecting to the war in a more negative way because it's not going well.
David Gorn, you've written a lot about Afghanistan. Do you see young people as the leading edge of erosion for support on this?
Well, I think the public in general would be following the same trends that David just described, regardless of age. I mean, and while I agree with everything he just said, I would add one more point to that. I think it was very easy for young people to identify with Barack Obama because of what seemed to be some very unconventional aspects to his candidacy. I mean, it wasn't just the historic racial barrier breaking that he did, but indeed using, you know, the new forms of media, printing up your own campaign signs, you know, some of this that Howard Dean did, but he really took it to a new level. And he seemed to be talking about, as he did this, a different sort of politics. Sometimes he said transcending partisan politics. Sometimes it seemed to be more one-on-one with the consumer, that is the voter. And I think as he's become president, he has been far more a conventional president than a lot of people might have expected him to be. I think that's kind of natural. It's hard to get out of the bubble when you're in the White House. And yes, before, you know, the White House, you know, calls in here, they've done new things with transparency. They have electronic town hall meetings, and there are a lot more gizmos and bells and whistles on this White House. But in terms of how they make decisions, in terms of how much they engage with the citizenry and with the media, which we can talk about later too, it's not a lot different than presidencies of the past. And what could be more conventional than taking a war like Afghanistan and sort of just slowly putting in more troops and more troops? So it really, you know, from one perspective, and I'm not saying that's the wrong decision, but from one perspective, he doesn't look like he's a transformative president in the way he's conducting his presidency, and if he's going to sort of just prosecute the war, you know, by just extending the existing trend lines, that too is not so unconventional. So I think it's, I think everybody who supported him, regardless of age, has to come to terms now with their with this relationship with Obama, not the candidate, but Obama the president.
Jose Vargas, you are a chronicler of how young people use the media. What grade would you give Obama on his transparency and on his use of whitehouse.gov? Does it get a D, a B? What does it get?
That's a really good question. You know, I actually started like a monthly kind of roundup from a bunch of online people to grade it when I was at the Washington Post, and I think they gave it a C and then a B. But I think when it comes to the key word here, I think is transparency. You know, I actually had Anil Dash, who's like one of the kind of founding fathers of just blogging in general, actually wrote that the federal government is the most interesting startup of 2009. There's just so much going on in terms of data.gov, recovery.gov, the fact that they're putting up bills online. Certainly, this is an improvement in terms of being transparent. But I think, you know, I don't really want to give full credit to the Obama administration for that, because that's technology. I think what's fascinating here, and I think this is something that has to be, that isn't being covered enough as it should, but also going to be a theme that we're going to see, is how the federal government and politics in general catches up with where the people are at. Okay. You know, at a time in which Facebook is like, if you think of it as a democracy, I mean, a country, it's basically the fifth largest country in the world. If you think of Twitter as like a focus group, in many ways, the way politics is conducted in Washington is still very much kind of an old school, and, you know, I lived there for 5 years. Is still very much kind of an old school thing. And it seems to me, to kind of answer fully more your question, it's fascinating that you saw a campaign that wrote the playbook as to how you campaign in the social networking era, and they got to the White House, and it seems as if that whole thing has just not evaporated, but has definitely been in the back burner.
I want to go back to David Gregory for just a moment. David, in terms of reaching young people, Obama, it seems to me, you know, wants the mainstream media and he wants the transparency. You've just interviewed him and done a lot of interviews with him. He got wonderful press coverage going in, and it seems to me that he would rather do a speech than a press conference. You were there in the Bush White House. How do you view his handling of the media, and where do you think their strategy is?
Saturation is the strategy. I mean, you know, he's the go-to guy. And that's how they operate, and perhaps to a fault, because he's out there a lot, and he does interviews, and he does press conferences, and he's much more of a spokesman than President Bush was. There was a method to that. First of all, I think President Obama and his team think he's more effective at it than his predecessor. But there are also those who were associated with President Bush who thought, you know, you can lose some of that message discipline if you deploy the president too often. So I think it's a liability.
Do you think he's overexposed?
No, I never say that, since I'm in the business of overexposing.
Right.
I don't want to sound like a hypocrite.
Right.
And so, no, I don't believe that. I'd like to interview him any day of the week when he'd like to take questions. I think it's an important function of what I do. But I do think, you know, it's been striking that, take healthcare as an example. It's clear he doesn't have the corner on social mobilization, and that the right is alive and well when it comes to social mobilization. And that's both mainstream sources for that as well as grassroots activity. So it's a mistake to take from the campaign, the mobilization of the campaign, both on young people's parts and on the campaign's part, and say that that was necessarily transferable. Because politics is a rough and tumble ball game, and it's different than elective politics in terms of governing.
Okay, Aaron McPike. You were the most recent graduate among us here, I think. I want to go to a student comment from an American University undergraduate here now, Christian Boghossian, that I think sums up Obama's challenges. She writes, during his campaign, President Obama made a lot of promises to young generations, such as making sure the cost of education and textbooks were lower to gain their support. Yet it seems the only things we have seen so far are poor job prospects, difficulty getting financial aid, and a health care plan that we'll be paying for on top of this. How can Obama possibly meet these challenges and live up to these expectations? And do you have a sense that young voters are falling out of love with Obama?
I don't know that I would say that they're falling out of love with Obama. I mean, you have to sort of think of it in terms of what we just went through. And young people, I don't want to say hated President Bush, but they certainly didn't really love him. And I think there's a lot more love for Obama than there ever was for Bush among that demographic. I mean, those are good questions, but for one thing, I don't know how he can possibly commit to lowering the price of textbooks. I mean, that's a little bit...
that's a little special interest. But what about health care? What about health care, which I find that I don't think a lot of people, and I'll proselytize for young people, I find that my students view this as a moral choice. Polling supports that. They support it. And yet they say they're very confused about it. And I wonder if that's Obama's fault or if it's the hijacking of his message by the right on this.
Well, there has been a lot of Republican involvement in the message and trying to throw them off course, and as they should. You know, they're trying to get involved in this too and get their way to some extent. But as far as health care goes, I think young people are paying attention to some degree, but I actually, for example, was at a press conference today with Nancy Pelosi, where she was talking about how the healthcare process will affect people 19 to 27 because they want to add in some into this legislation that young people can opt into their parents' coverage until their 27th birthday. And I don't know how, I actually don't think that young people are paying that close of attention to healthcare, but if I can bring that back a little bit to just what Obama's doing in terms of legislation for young people, they signed a major credit card bill earlier this year. And if I can just ask, you know, people in the audience, if you're over 30, don't raise your hand, but is anybody out there a homeowner? Yeah, no. And one?
We don't know. They don't have capital gains tax yet either.
And how about, how many of you have credit cards? Right.
Okay.
And how many of you have ever made... How many of you have ever been late on a payment for a credit card?
Okay,
that's
this is radio.
Decent.
We need to indicate there are a lot of hands raised.
Yeah, well, for credit cards, there are a lot of hands raised. But that would be a bill that I would expect that was something that the Obama administration would really want to push out to you. But there are so many pieces of that bill that affect your lives, but I think one way that the Obama administration is not getting through is that I don't think a lot of people are aware of what they've done, or his ratings might be a little higher.
I want to get to one student question here. Come on up to the mic and identify yourself, tell you where you're from, and direct your question to someone on the panel, please.
All right. My name is Lila Hernandez. I'm a second-year graduate student in the International Media Program in the School of Communication. And my question is for David Gregory, but anyone else can chime in. Now that you're a host of Meet the Press, I don't know if you still get to be a part of the White House Press Corps, but I was wondering what the difference was in being a member of the White House Press Corps under the Bush administration versus the Obama administration, and not necessarily Obama himself, but even his press secretary, if the Bush press conferences were a lot more secretive and shady, and he would only ask certain people certain questions that he knew were safe, and if that's not the case, and if Obama's are just a lot more open, and
okay, I think we got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Words like shady are not the right words at all. There was a different approach during the Bush years, and I'll explain it this way. I mean, I think they were not as committed from the president on down to engaging the media in a way to affect the narrative as much. So the president didn't view the press secretary as important a job as this president views the role of the press secretary, to both challenge his opponents, his critics, and also to take on the media and some of the fights that happen within the media and some of the various narratives. So I think the Obama administration is more willing to engage in that regard. And I think that hurt the Bush administration when they needed to engage and try to, you know, change the dynamic when you got into Iraq or you got into the Plame investigation, the leak investigation and the like. So I think, generally speaking, that this administration more than the last wants to engage, wants to deal both with individual reporters, wants to deploy the president a lot more to affect the message. I think they realize in this news cycle they have to be more aggressive. Having said that, what's interesting, as sophisticated as they may be, they still recognize that they have not kept up with some of the rigor and the demand of a 24-hour news cycle, as you know, as hip as they claim they are.
I want to follow up on that, but first I want to say that was David Gregory, and you're listening to the American Forum on WAMU 88.5. My guests are David Gregory from Meet the Press, Jose Antonio Vargas, Technology and Innovations editor of the Huffington Post, David Winston, Republican strategist, David Korn, Washington bureau chief of Mother Jones, and columnist for PoliticsDaily.com, Aaron McPike from Congress Daily, and I'm Jane Hall, a professor at American University. To continue the conversation, please visit Twitter.com/American_forum or use the hashtag AM Forum. I want to come back to asking about the media, but first I want to ask David Winston. We have several Davids here, so we want to use first and last names. David Winston, you were there in the turnover of the Republicans taking back, after the faltering by the Clinton administration, the control of Congress. Are Republicans thinking that young voters are not going to come out this time? And do you see a way that there will be a turnover? What do you think is going to happen, particularly regarding them, but also overall?
Well, let me start off with a political premise here, and that is there's this concept that it was Barack Obama that sort of led 18 to 29-year-olds to this different direction. And truth be told, that was actually the second election, having gone through the first one in 2006, where the critical change actually happened, where you saw 18 to 29-year-olds break very heavily against the Republican Party in that particular election. That's where the big definition occurred. And one of the major reasons Republicans lost House and Senate majorities in that election was the 18 to 29-year-old vote, as opposed to losing that group by about 11 points. It was somewhere in the neighborhood of about 25 to 30 like this last election. So the interesting dynamic is it 18 to 29-year-olds following Obama, or is it Obama following 18 to 29-year-olds? Clearly, the jump, the difference between on-year and off-year elections in terms of on-year being presidential elections, off-year being non-presidential years, in terms of the turnout of the 18 to 29-year-old vote is pretty significant. Typically, on an off-year election, it's around, that group will make up about 11 to 12% of the electorate. On on-year elections, around 17 to 18. So one of the big questions for this next election is, do they come close to sustaining that level? For Republicans, ultimately, we as a party cannot sustain losing 18 to 29-year-olds by that margin. It is simply not sustainable. You can lose by 11 points, but by that margin, it's just overwhelming and can't be done. And so one of the challenges to the party is to figure out how to address that challenge. To some degree, there's a different issue mix, as was described, that has to be addressed. But there's another aspect, too, and that is that the political operatives within the party have to start taking the vote for that cohort seriously.
Well, is it about cynically saying, oh, let's have, you know, Republicans tweet? How can you reach out to young people and make Republicanism cool also?
Well, Bernie, the whole Republicans after the election were like, oh, we've got to learn the Internet. Oh, we've got to learn how to tweet. Now, the reason we didn't know, a large part of these current campaigns didn't know how to do that, because talking to 18 to 29-year-olds wasn't a part of their campaign plan. So why would they ever pick up that skill, right?
Well, it was a vicious cycle, wasn't it? In the old days, they don't vote, mm-hmm. So why do we care?
Right.
Which has changed.
No,
right?
No. And so the inverse, you know, a friend of mine said, gee, you know, if Oldsmobile had 13 million email addresses, would they be doing any better? And the answer is no. The problem is they're Oldsmobile, right? And so the challenge.
What are you saying about the Republican Party?
No.
Here,
so what I'm saying is the challenge of the Republican Party isn't to learn how to use technology. The challenge of the Republican Party is how to have a conversation with 18 to 29-year-olds that, for a variety of reasons, political folks within the party have decided, gee, they don't turn out to vote, so we're going to focus on other groups. Well, guess what? We learned in the last two elections they were structural to our defeat.
Jose Vargas, want to weigh in on this?
I actually wanted to say the first thing that Michael Steele did after getting at the RNC was having a technology summit. It was literally 3 days after he was at the RNC. And I went. It was very interesting because, I mean, everybody just admitted to the fact that, you know, we really need to get on this. And for the record, by the way, Republicans are doing a lot better job on Twitter than the Democrats are. So that's really interesting. But I think more than that, technology is not... it's not a panacea. You know, at the end of the day, this is about content. This is about message. I'm really glad that you mentioned 18 to 29 vote in the 2006 election, I'll never forget getting a phone call from a friend of mine, a Cuban Republican who's 25 in Miami, who had voted Republican, and who said that after the immigration debate, with what the Republicans did with that, he's going to vote Democrat. I was so surprised by this. But this was a friend who was historically, he'd voted three times all Republican. And that time, because of the Republicans' message on immigration, decided to switch Democrat. So at the end of the day, it's not the technology, it really is the message. And so I think that's something that, frankly, the Republican Party really needs to get at.
Can I just add one thing? It's David Gregory. I mean, I think that there's something larger here. I think, look, the messaging is important. The platforms are important. You know, we think about this in terms of what I do. You know, I mean, we don't have as many young people watching Meet the Press as I'd like to have. Part of that is getting in front of you, and part of it is just the flow of your lives. I mean, chances are I get up a little early at my house than you do. And, you know, I've been there. I remember that. So part of it is just your life change. And also your engagement with government changes. You know, the reason why it's a big question about whether you'll come out and vote in the off-year election is because historically young people don't. Historically, they didn't come out in on-year elections the way that young people did last year. And it was some of the engagement that David Winston was talking about. But it's also the role of government in your lives and what you think government should be doing. What role should it play in terms of providing health insurance to people, in terms of, you know, projecting American power overseas? So this debate between right and left over whether government is the solution is something that does bear on the lives of young people, and I think animates young people. But ultimately, that's the battleground. That's the proving ground, a lot more than, you know, who's winning the war on Twitter, which is still going to represent a smaller slice of the electorate.
But you know what was
David Corn? Yes.
What was interesting during the campaign was the ability that the Obama crew had to mobilize people on a lot of different levels, on issue levels, on just a sense of freshness, and a what I would call a political cultural level. And they have not tried to do that, I would say, in any real strong way since winning last November. There's this group called Organizing for America, which is the continuation of the Obama campaign. And when you get to the heavy lifting of health care and trying to engage people who are otherwise busy, I mean, elections are great because they matter a lot, but they're also theater. You know, there's sports to it. There's personalities, and you can engage in it in a lot of different ways, and it's compelling. You know, you want to watch David Gregory on Sunday to see how the candidates are going to just, you know, come across as individuals. Once you get past that and you get just to the policy questions, public option, no public option, that's where I think leaders, particularly when reaching young people who are busy and who haven't sort of settled into these more stable domestic lives that some of us have,
sedentary
is the better way.
Yeah, where tax rates maybe matter more, you think more about health care, because when you're at a certain age, you don't worry about a family, you don't worry even about your own health care because you feel kind of strong and young. And it seems to me, so reaching people in that demographic, there is almost an obligation on the part of leaders, whether it's the president or the opposition, that David Winston would be helping, to sort of try to find ways to engage people to get involved in the policy debates, which will bring them to the polls if they're involved. And here's where I thought the Obama team was going to be able to try to continue on that basis. It wouldn't be the same type of engagement. It wouldn't be 13 million people as they ended up with on their mailing list at the end of the campaign, maybe 2, 3, 4 million. And I think they've dropped the ball on that side, which gives an opening to the Republicans.
I just have to say, someone just tweeted, young people do watch Meet the Press, David Gregory.
No, I know they do, and believe me, I appreciate that. And I get the feedback on Twitter as well. And I know you're out there, and I want to make sure I'm speaking to you and also speak to others who may not be watching. I mean, but, you know, it is a reality that 10:30 in the morning, while I think is late, and not so late to some young people.
Well, let me turn this on its head. I want to be on record that I grew up watching Meet the Press, which is why I'm sitting here teaching and moderating here at American University today. I think it's not true that young people don't care, but I also want to turn this around, and maybe I can ask a question of the young woman who's standing here. Do young people have to have, you know, everybody's mobilized by this election, but Can we blame young people at all for the fact that if they care about health care, they aren't at those town halls? Why has the right been able to mobilize and take a playbook page, in my opinion? Do you have any responsibility? I'll ask you that question, young lady.
I may be disqualifying myself because I'm actually 32 years old.
Oh, okay.
That looks young to me.
I'm only technically an undergraduate. But I go to town halls.
Tell us your name, please, and who you are.
Elizabeth Hopkins. I go to town halls. I went to one with my representative, Donna Edwards, in Germantown. It didn't get covered. There weren't fireworks. I am concerned about the issues. I felt like what David Corn said did not describe me at all. For me, it's not about the personality. It's not about Obama. It's about the issues. It's about a public option, not because public option is a buzzword, but because it's the only check insurance industry.
Okay, all right. I appreciate your point of view, but we want to get to a lot of questions here today. Let me turn to another question over here. What do you think about this question that I'm raising of, do young people have some responsibility to get involved if you care about these issues, if you're concerned about the economy? I mean, is Obama supposed to only promise to reduce the textbooks and help your credit cards? I mean, where are you guys on this?
Well, I think, unfortunately, most of the people, I'm Brian
Identify
Koenig.
Yourself, please.
I'm Brian Koenig, senior in School of Communication and in School of Public Affairs. I think the problem is when you're posing a question to a room like this, you're posing a question to American university students, and American university students are a very bad example of where young people in America stand when it comes to interaction with government.
Well, we know you guys are all political junkies here. That is true. I mean, people are happy to be working at Brookings. You know, that's the floats everybody's boat here.
I mean, we come here because we actually care. Uh-huh. And I'm wondering, outside of AU students, how many people care? I know I have friends who go to school all over the country who could care less, because they do, honestly, exactly what was said.
Okay.
They're 19, 20, 21, 22 years old. The idea of a family and a home and the actual need for health care is 10, 15, 20 years away. And they either don't care, they don't have the time, the energy. I mean, the only reason we're here is because we actually are willing to take the time out of our own lives to try and find a way to be engaged. It's not like people our age have massive amounts of time to go to town halls. Often there's transportation issues.
Okay, well, let me throw this back to the panel here. I think Brian's making a very good point. I would just say that, you know, again, I have heard young people talk in an idealistic way about the uninsured being a moral question. And I'm wondering if there is a way, David, for the Republican Party to reach out to some of this idealism, to some of the points of view, maybe not on health care, but is there another way to reach young people given their lives, given what their concerns are?
Yeah, part of the dynamic here, again, what's unique to the 18 to 29-year cohort is while they may have partisan views, their partisan behavior is not ingrained. It's a new behavior. Ideology, while important, is still secondary to what the solution is. And so, an interesting, and pragmatic isn't the right word, but there's a sense of this group, outcomes are what matter, and if there's no sense that there's movement toward outcomes, frustration happens a lot quicker. And so I think to some degree what's being reflected in these polls is that frustration happening a lot quicker, because there was this huge expectation, for better or for worse, and the Obama administration came in with 18 to 29-year-olds having this massive expectation, and what they've run into, as most administrations do when they come to a city like this, is that it's really hard to get stuff done.
You know, it's David Gregory. I think that's such an important point, because what people get drawn to in campaigns, and it's not just young people, campaigns work. Campaigns are highly efficient. The federal government is not highly efficient.
David Corn,
there's a decision point.
Right.
You know, it ends with a yes or no. And, you know, and in public policy, even if you pass this health care bill, it's not going to be a definitive answer to the solution.
Right. And but it goes to the point of what I think a lot of young people were engaging in was a process to say, hey, I've been called on for some degree of service. I've been called on to act on a sense of purpose, and this is a leader who is galvanizing me into action. It's not because, as you pointed out, you know, you're not going to have some of the parochial concerns that government can speak to, whether it's taxes or even healthcare. And if you do care about healthcare, it's part of something else. Again, the role of government, the mission of government to help people. A lot of young people want to join up with that. So again, what you have is faith in a leader and less faith or support for his policies. By the way, this is true across the board, and it was true among independent voters. And you saw this earlier on in the administration. People had a great deal of faith in Obama, less support for his policies that are grinding through the process of government. Presidents aren't popular unless they achieve things. And the reason that Congress, David Winston can, I think, back this up or tell me I'm wrong, but Congress is traditionally unpopular because what they do is really unpleasant. And it doesn't yield concrete results either quickly enough or very often at all. And so there's a reason why, you know, presidents don't really want to get involved in lawmaking. They want to just achieve things because that's how they do it. Look, I think the Iraq War would have been popular had it gone better earlier on. I don't think the American people, there was certainly a vocal anti-war group, but the American people were at large, even the left in this country, didn't get animated until 2005. They weren't opposed to the war. They were opposed to what they perceived as failure.
I want to ask Jose Vargas to weigh in about media coverage on this. You're a student of both old and new media. How much should we blame the media for this coverage that is highly polarized between Fox News and MSNBC and CNN and the sort of, there doesn't seem to be a lot of percentage in not being polarized for politicians. You know, you have these events. Do you see the media as driving the polarization, or do you see them? Yes. Okay.
Well, I mean, by the way, back to your point, when the president had a rally at the University of Maryland, I think they sent a message out on email, and within 2 days, 20,000 students showed up.
Right, and they cheered Max Bock. They cheered the plans. They knew the plans.
Well, what's interesting here is that these town hall meetings that have been covered incredibly usually happening during the time when young people are usually at school or at work and couldn't participate. So I think that's an interesting point to make. The other thing is, I mean, I'm not as young. I'm 28, so I'm not as young as you guys probably are. But what I find interesting here is, you know, with all due respect, I've actually never sat through a whole episode of Meet the Press, and I was a political reporter. It just wasn't a part of my... What's interesting, actually, Brian made up a...
wait a minute.
No, hold on a second. Hold on. Let me make sure
I thought you were a whole lot more interesting until 30 seconds ago.
No, let's pursue this.
Maybe we can have some chairs thrown here.
Let me put this into context. What Brian said was really, really interesting, but let me actually challenge what he said. He was talking about the young people who are going to four-year colleges like American or Yale or Harvard who are going to be interested anyway because they read The Economist and The New Yorker and, you know, they do all of that, right? Coming from San Francisco State University and having a lot of friends who graduated from community colleges, I actually think it was fascinating that all of my friends, you know, mostly Hispanic, Asian, some African-American friends, were so excited about this campaign. And frankly, I think I almost feel as if sometimes I'm part of two media worlds. There's the media world that I got to know as a reporter for the Chronicle in San Francisco and at the Washington Post. And then there's this world of the internet that is, you know, right now I actually checked a few hours ago, Barack Obama had 6.9 million members on his Facebook fan page. Now, granted, Michael Jackson is more popular. He has 13 million. But what's interesting is I'm reading the comments that the people, that most of the quote-unquote kids are writing. These are subtle, informative, living in a kind of a linking economy when they're, you know, posting articles that they read and blogs that they read. I think the challenge for the administration now is for the fact that you had what the young voters made a fifth of the electorate last year, right? How do you then, how does the DNC, how does Obama for America, how does this White House really engage and really make you know, this as a part of the process. And I think that's, frankly, it's still too early to tell, but right now it doesn't, it's not looking as good as it can be.
Right, and if I can add...
Erin McPie.
It's not looking like it, this whole year they haven't really done a whole lot with that. The University of Maryland event was one event, you know, and it was pretty easy because the president didn't have to get on Air Force One. They didn't have to spend all that extra money to go somewhere else. It was a very friendly place in a blue state, you know, probably a pretty liberal campus. It was pretty easy for them to do. But during the campaign, they were at lots of college campuses and reaching out to college kids in many ways. I'll give an example. One of our interns, I guess it would have been in the summer of 2008, was a student at the University of North Carolina. And she told me when she got to the Capitol for her internship that she, as a journalist for the Daily Tar Heel, was getting text messages and calls and anything you can imagine when she was in class from the press shop in their North Carolina office. I mean, I'm a political reporter in Washington, and I couldn't always get a call back from the Obama administration, but they were reaching out to college papers, or excuse me, the Obama campaign at that time. But, you know, she was... They were all over the place with college kids, and now they just kind of did this University of Maryland event to check it off the list. But they don't—they're not talking to young people in the same way now because they don't think they have to, because they don't think that they care so much about specific issues. But I think the good thing about some of this and the idea that young people may not be as enchanted with Obama as they were is that now they're paying attention more than we ever thought that they did, and so now it's maybe time for them to do something about that.
Okay. That was Erin McPike. You're listening to An American Forum on WAMU 88.5. My guests are David Gregory from NBC, Jose Antonio Vargas from Huffington Post, David Winston, Republican strategist, David Korn, Washington Bureau Chief of Mother Jones, and that was Erin McPike, as I've said, and I'm Jane Hall. I know that David Gregory's going to have to leave us in a few minutes, so David, thank you for being here, and what do you think of what Jose Vargas said about not watching a full... Meet the
press. Please, please, I will watch this Sunday. I promise.
I'll hold him to that. I think he makes an important point actually about you know, young people who are engaged in politics have a voice in a way that I don't think they had before, and I think that there is both an emotional and an intellectual engagement with what government does, as well as some of the biggest problems in our country, in our society, and indeed the world, and. So the opportunity for expression is there, and there are both ideological voices that are on cable and on the internet, but also voices who are more mainstream who reflect their thinking. But again, with whether it's Twitter or it's Facebook or it's the blogs, there's a way to be heard, which we know is true of the digital audience and of our audience more generally. And indeed, the political, it's a big part of the political audience that wants to be heard, and there's a way to express yourself and be heard. I think the challenge now for young people who want their voice to be felt is to build on what we saw in 2008. To take part in an historic election was one thing. To be drawn to the kind of leader that young people were drawn to in Barack Obama has to sustain itself, and it's got to be built around organization on particular issues, and it has to go beyond what was such, as David Korn said, a compelling election that does take on the aspect of sport and is not always replicated in terms of its excitement level or how compelling, or the sense that you can really make a difference in the way that an election like last year could.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Jose Vargas, you're going to tell him you're sorry before he has to go?
No, not that. But yeah, sorry about that. What I wanted to say, though, is that then the media must do a better job covering young people. I was a newspaper reporter for 11 years, and I can tell you that editors and... They look down, frankly, I think, for the most part, on basically covering in an extensive, substantive way young people. Let me give you an example. A few weeks ago, by the way, as a senator, the first bill that Barack Obama introduced as senator was basically raising Pell Grants, right? This was interesting because the woman who started the Students for Barack Obama Facebook group, she told me that that was the reason why she started the Students for Barack Obama Facebook group, was because Obama said that he's going to support Pell Grant. It was the first thing he said. This is the largest expansion of federal financial aid since the GI Bill. I did a little research yesterday looking at, has this been covered by the Washington Post, the New York Times, or any of these other news organizations? Barely a word. So what is that about? I mean, I think in many ways, political reporting, and being a political reporter, at least during the campaign, there's so much sport, as David Korn said, so much theater, that we forget that we're talking about issues in people's lives. And I think young people, hopefully, this is my hope, is going to help lead and demand for better political coverage. And that they would lead, that we don't want just this he said, she said, Republican versus Democrat or whatever, that we want issues, we want substance, and we want information.
Jose, let me be,
David Korn.
Please go
be
ahead.
A little bit of a skunk here, and that, you know, for reporters and editors to do that, they have to see a payoff. They
That's
have
true.
To see, whether it's young or old, I mean, I at our at motherjones.com, you know, it's, you know, we get to monitor our traffic, as you do at Huffington Post, on a minute-by-minute basis. And I see what sells, so to speak, you know. Anything involving Sarah Palin, Dick Cheney, and sex, hopefully all three, you know. you know, goes through the roof. You start writing about the Commodity Futures Trading Commission or financial regulation or even Pell Grants, and it's, you know, it doesn't have the same vavoom as many other things. I'm curious also that we've gotten, you know, through the first two-thirds or longer of this program so far, and one issue that I thought would come up that in terms of speaking about young people in particular is perhaps galvanizing as an issue in and of itself is climate change. And it hasn't yet. And I was thinking too that the White House has, you know, the administration has lost an opportunity to keep people involved by, you know, Obama will say all the right things on this, maybe not all the right things, but close to in a conventional sense. But he doesn't really, he's not really out there calling on people to get involved in the process. I've been asking this question for a couple months now, and I can understand why you wouldn't go to young people and say, "Get on the streets for a public option." Okay, you know, who here, you know, really cares?
No, wait,
about
they
it?
Do care. That's
I know you do.
Stereotype.
Because you spoke earlier.
They do care. They care about the number of uninsured in this country.
But when it comes to, you know, climate change, so maybe gay rights issues and so on, there are clearly certain issues that resonate more with a younger, politically minded audience.
Okay,
I think you have to sort of focus on those to keep those people feeling like they're doing something, you know, when there's no election to be had.
Okay, I want to get to a couple more student questions, and we'll come back to this. David Winston, if you could.
I just want one quick comment that I want to make. And one of the dynamics here, and again, this is part of the whole communications process that I think people, and in a bizarre way, actually, I'm going to agree with David Korn here, which is one of the few times, hold your breath.
Mother Jones and the RNC are going to work together.
Yeah, sorry about this one. But here's and you saw this happen during the whole healthcare debate, where Obama's got to go back and retune his message, right? And there's this whole obsession with message, and the fact is that's not what it's about. It's about the content. And I think some degree what's happened is as we've moved over and said, well, if I could just phrase this slightly differently, I could convince people to believe this content, what they normally wouldn't believe, I think leads to a bizarre argument as opposed to the focus on the content. One of the things that I think people were hoping in the last election from Obama in terms of those people who supported him was there would be this focus on content, and if there's another sort of area of dissatisfaction, it's a sense of beginning to nuance things in a way that people feel it sounds nuanced.
Okay, let's go to questions. Will you identify yourself, please, and ask a quick question?
Thank you, Professor Hall. My name's Sam Hagedorn. I'm a sophomore here at American University in the School of Public Affairs. And my question was, I've noticed the conversation so far seems to have been circulating around, you know, young people dropping out of engagement and sort of losing that optimism and energy from earlier on. And I just wanted to throw into the conversation, I mean, in September, Gallup found that a majority of 18 to 25-year-olds approve of the job that Congress is doing, that there was a majority and no other age demographic was anywhere near that, and that young people have, you know, the strongest support for President Obama. And just kind of turning onto that question of whether young people have really, you know, lost faith in Obama, and I mean, in light, looking at that, whether we've missed the forest through the trees, so to speak.
Are you saying they disapprove more of Congress than?
No, I'm saying a majority of young people approve of the job Congress is doing. And
a majority
no
of young people approve of
Congress. Was above, you know, 40 points.
Okay.
That there's a major
okay.
disparity
do you have a,
there.
Do you have a question
in the
you want to ask about that, or you just want
to? I have some reaction to that.
Okay.
No, I mean,
David Winston?
I mean, the only thing I can tell you in terms of that is that what you've seen is and I'm not sure I necessarily. Well, there are a variety of different numbers out, but let me give you the trend, and that is those numbers are still down from where they were 4 or 5 months ago. And so it's the trend you're looking at. There may still be approval at this point, which I think, again, in the NBC poll, there was still approval for Obama, but it is clearly down from where it was. And so it's why did that happen, and what does the White House have to do to respond to that? And so the dynamic is they're dealing with a situation they would prefer not to, and that is how do we rebuild their support?
I want to ask Jose Antonio Vargas this question, and also perhaps the audience of young people. Do you think that Obama is keeping his promise to gays about Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the Defense of Marriage Act? And is that an important issue to young people that you talk to?
That's a really interesting question in light of the rally and the speech on Saturday. You know, when on Election Day, Proposition 8 in California was passed, and this was the initiative that banned same-sex marriage, basically overturned what had happened in the California Supreme Court. And what's interesting is it was young people, gay and straight alike, who actually rallied to got all these, like, no on eight protests across the country. And what was fascinating was that the kind of the legacy gay organizations, like the Human Rights Campaign that hosted a dinner on Saturday, didn't quite know what to do with this grassroots activity. So I think what you're seeing right now in the gay rights community, which is really a fascinating story that maybe Mother Jones can write, it's a really interesting divide that is both generational and I think also trying to figure out, you know, how do you, now that you have a Democratic Congress, a Democratic White House, if you're not going to pass, you know, if you're not going to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell now, when are you going to do that? You know, and so I think that's interesting.
Okay, I want to go to this young man who's yawning because he's been standing here waiting to ask his question.
Thank
go
you.
Ahead.
Thank you. I'm James Trout. I'm a senior here at American at the School of Public Affairs, and my question basically has to do with domestic policy. A few hours ago, I noticed I saw on CNN that the Senate Financial Committee has approved. Just approved a bill to on the public option, and it was basically a straight line. It was basically a straight line vote with Olympia Snowe of Maine, moderate to liberal Republican descending. And my question is, because we've had two bills in the previously, both of which have been stopped by conservative Democrats. Is this a situation basically with third time's a charm? Is Congress going to be able to get this bill across? And
okay.
If Obama,
I think we have the gist of your question. Aaron McPike.
As far as the public option is concerned, the Senate Finance Committee did not pass a public option. They passed health care legislation.
So what do you
the
see
Baucus
going
bill,
towards
but,
the future?
But
on
I mean,
this?
At this point, it does look like they are going to pass a health care bill. I would be shocked if a public option ends up passing Congress at the end of the day. I mean, I don't know what anybody else thinks here in the panel, but I don't think a public option's at the end of the day going to get any.
He's not going to help on that.
Right,
I don't know if I'm the right person to talk about public option.
As far as 2010 and the midterms.
But I think Aaron sort of addresses an interesting point, and this is the challenge that the Obama administration has been facing, and that is once you get into the complexities in terms of trying to manage a majority coalition, which, by the way, is extraordinarily difficult, right? Majority coalitions are a variety of different people, and the idea is if you can get 90% of them with you 90% of the time, you're doing well, and they're learning how to do that, and right now they have struggled pretty significantly. And again, to go to like a sort of an unfortunate routine for them, when Saturday Night Live does a bit, when they literally list all the things that you haven't gotten done, That's not a good weekend for your press team.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that. I mean, a year or so ago, they were parroting how easy the media were on him and saying, you know, Mr. Obama, do you need a pillow? Remember that skit? I want to get to this question here. Go ahead, identify yourself. Please make your question brief and don't make a statement. I want to get to as many as we can.
Jeffrey Beebe, Jr. at the School of Public Affairs. I want to ask the panel if the media itself is a problem engaging the young people. Cable news networks like CNN, MSNBC, et cetera, have a short attention span, like 5 minutes each segment. But the media that young people turn attention to, blogs, Matt Drudge, if people read him, don't seem to have the access to important people to interview.
Okay. Who wants to take that, Jose Vargas or David Korn?
Well, I would say the media, you know, we could spend literally hours here dissecting various problems with the media, old, new, and in between. And I really think it has nothing to do with, you know, with demographics by age. But let me just ask the people here. How many people here read a newspaper?
Applaud, okay. Please. This is radio.
Okay, applaud. Okay. That was most okay. How many people here pay for a newspaper? Oh, man, that was less than 10%. How many people here read a Newsweekly or a political opinion journal once a week? Okay. How many people pay for one? Not a lot. I mean, you know.
How many read online?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to have microfinance for the mainstream media, guys. You're going to have to get charged. That's not going to work.
There's a lot. The problem is, you know, a lot of different problems with the media. The mainstream media, I think, covers the official story too much and doesn't give you, you know, stuff to the side. Sometimes ideological media gives you too much opinion, and CNN and MSNBC and Fox all have to package things in little sound bites, and they go for the drama. So we have over coverage of town hall meetings and really not in-depth conversations about blogs. But ultimately, it comes down to this. There's nothing you can do about it. Sorry. But there is enough good information out there, whether it's by going to Huffington Post or the Drudge Report or Mother Jones or Congress Daily or to David's blog. There's so much out there. It's overwhelming, and it makes it harder on you to sort out and spend the time, and you can get sucked into. I do this, watching MSNBC all day long. I appear on it sometimes, and getting involved with like the Who Lies, and all the other and the town hall stuff, rather than actually thinking about what is good or not good about a public option. So to become, you know, it's harder to be well informed, even though there is more information out there, and that's not an age thing. It's just it's the media that you're coming of age and confronting. And so you have to take that challenge up.
That's going to have to be our final word. I want to thank my guests, David Gregory, Jose Antonio Vargas, David Winston, David Korn, and Aaron McPike. I also want to thank our studio audience. Continue the conversation through the American Forum group on Facebook and visit twitter.com/American_forum or use the hashtag AM Forum. American Forum is a co-production of American University School of Communication and WAMU 88.5. American Forum is sponsored by Laird B. Anderson and Florence H. Ashby. The Kennedy Political Union also provided assistance for this American Forum broadcast. Our producers are Karen Munson and Sarah Cumby with special assistance from Perry Eppy. The engineers are Jonathan Cherry and Andrew Chadwick. I'm Jane Hall. Thank you for listening.